At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Britain's Conversation. This is LBC with Tom Swarbrick.
10 to 6, Friday night. Tom Swarbrick on LBC means, yes, one thing. For the final time before the second Trump era begins, it's Simon Marks, American Week.
Tom, winter is coming. I mean that in a literal sense. The top temperature at Monday's inauguration of Donald Trump was forecast to be minus 5 Celsius. So they've announced within the last hour that they're moving it indoors, which will come as good news for all those old people, the Clintons, the Bushes, the Bidens, the gerontocracy in Congress. No need for them now to bundle up and wish it was all over.
This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
That was Donald Trump's Gotham-style inaugural address the first time around in January 2017. We do not think he's going to adopt that dark, threatening, funereal tone on Monday. This time, he seems to be in an upbeat mood, promising to bring about a new golden age in the United States, and already pointing to the ceasefire in Gaza that he undoubtedly helped to make happen. We have achieved so much without even being in the White House, he crowed on social media as he beat President Joe Biden in announcing the deal. Imagine, Trump wrote, all the wonderful things that will happen when I return to the White House.
What is the true book's credit for this, Mr. President, you or Trump?
Is that a joke?
Oh. It has not been an easy week for Joe Biden. That reporter asking which president historians should credit with the Middle East ceasefire was not joking, amid reports that Trump's special envoy Steve Witkoff played a significant role last week in Israel, reading the riot act to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. While Trump insisted the agreement wouldn't have happened without him, Biden claimed the actual deal was his.
The elements of this deal for what I laid out in detail this past May, which was embraced by countries around the world and endorsed overwhelmingly by the UN Security Council.
The reality is that credit for the agreement should be shared between them. They worked together behind the scenes to get it done. Biden, desperate to avoid a repeat of 1981, and the ignominy dished out by Iran towards outgoing President Jimmy Carter. The Iranians only allowed the 53 American hostages held for 444 days in the U.S. Embassy in Tehran to return home after Ronald Reagan had taken the oath of office. Biden this week was at pains to point out that this time around, things were different.
I knew this deal would have to be implemented by the next team, so I told my team to coordinate closely with the incoming team to make sure we're all speaking with the same voice. Because that's what American presidents do.
As they prepare for Monday's handover and their departure from Washington, some of Biden's top aides have had a rough week. When Secretary of State Antony Blinken took to the State Department's briefing room yesterday for his final appearance behind the podium,
I have even greater respect, even greater appreciation for you asking the tough questions. Being on the receiving end, sometimes that's not always the most comfortable thing. Not always the most enjoyable thing, but it is the most necessary thing in our democracy.
Reporters in Gaza were on the receiving end of your bombs. Why did you keep the bombs flowing when we had a deal in May? We all knew we had a deal.
I'm happy to address questions when we get a chance. Thank you.
Two separate reporters from left-leaning pro-Palestinian outlets were determined not to be stonewalled. Both were ejected from the briefing room. The second, Sam Husseini of the Institute for Public Accuracy, a well-known Washington-based non-profit.
Please, sir, respect the process. Thank you.
Oh, respect the process. Criminal! Why aren't you in the Hague? Why aren't you in the Hague? Why aren't you in the Hague?
And that was the last we saw of him. He's not wrong, by the way, about that process that governs the State Department briefing. It is woeful and long overdue a shake-up. On Capitol Hill this week, some of Donald Trump's cabinet picks were facing uncomfortable questions, none more so than Pete Hegseth, the Fox News weekend breakfast host that Trump wants to head the Pentagon.
I'm not a perfect person, but redemption is real. And God forged me in ways that I know I'm prepared for.
The nominee tried to get ahead of the train in his prepared remarks to the Senate Armed Services Committee as his confirmation hearing began. He insisted that thanks to the grace of God and his wife, he has put his womanizing alcohol-fueled days behind him, but then twisted in the wind a bit when he was asked about claims of sexual assault and financial mismanagement. As for all that experience, the Democrats weren't standing for it, scoffing at the notion that as a former junior officer, he is ready to lead the nearly 3 million men and women in uniform. Here's one memorable exchange with Tammy Duckworth, a legitimate military hero, now a Democrat senator from Illinois, channeling her inner Nick Ferrari as she asked Hegseth about ASEAN, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations.
You talked about the Indo-Pacific a little bit, and I'm glad that you mentioned it. Can you name the importance of at least one of the nations in the ASEAN and what type of agreement we have with at least one of those nations? And how many nations are in ASEAN, by the way?
I couldn't tell you the exact amount of nations in that, but I know we have allies in South Korea and Japan and in AUKUS with Australia, trying to work on submarines with them.
Mr. Hegseth, none of those countries are in ASEAN.
Mr. Hegseth was hammered over his longstanding opposition to women serving in conflict zones, but he did insist he won't be actually hammered in the job. And it was all enough for the Republicans in the majority on the committee, who are poised to put him atop the Department of Defense. Trump ally, Senator Eric Schmidt of Missouri.
For all the talk of experience and not coming from the same cocktail parties that permanent Washington is used to, you are a breath of fresh air.
So far, most of Trump's nominees look like they are going to waltz into office with a loyal Republican wind at their backs. But keep an eye on Tulsi Gabbard, the president-elect's controversial selection to become the next director of national intelligence, and Kash Patel, the extremist he's chosen to head the FBI. Their confirmation hearings will be a big test of Republican fealty to the new president.
My fellow Americans, I'm speaking to you tonight from the Oval Office.
On Wednesday night, for one last time, Joe Biden interrupted prime time on American television. His farewell address to the nation was a bit of an oddity. He mangled much of it, underscoring that when he and First Lady Jill Biden insist that he could have won another term in the Oval Office if Democrats had not turned against him, they are embracing a delusion. He spoke of his achievements, a revived economy, stronger international alliances, and restoring at least briefly, the country's constitutional traditions.
In the past 4 years, our democracy has held strong. And every day I've kept my commitment to be president for all Americans through one of the toughest periods in our nation's history.
But then came the astonishing caveat, the sudden revelation that after doing nothing at all to rein in the excesses of men he didn't name, like Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos and OpenAI's Sam Altman, actually, he thinks, they're a major threat to the country.
An oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth, power and influence that literally threatens our entire democracy, our basic rights and freedoms. Americans are being buried under an avalanche of misinformation and disinformation, enabling the abuse of power. The free press is crumbling. Social media is giving up on fact-checking. The truth is smothered by lies told for power and for profit. We must hold the social platforms accountable to protect our children, our families, and our very democracy from the abuse of power.
No kidding. If only he'd thought of it earlier. What a missed opportunity by a president whose administration has falsely insisted it lacked the power to interfere in private businesses, even though he now belatedly concedes they are harming American society. If that music is triggering a Pavlovian response for you, then, like me, you were probably a fan of the TV drama Twin Peaks in the 1990s. Yesterday, the writer-director behind it, David Lynch, died at the age of 78. His films included Eraserhead, Blue Velvet, Wild at Heart, and Mulholland Drive. He was a surrealist, loved mystery, film noir. His work, said the New York Times today, seethed with bizarre. And with very carefully selected music.
The music or sound effects or anything has to marry to the picture. Cinema is a lot like music. There's different movements, there's different things that happen in cinema like in music, and these transitions from one thing to another are critical like they are in music.
David Lynch, as we enter a new, potentially dark and definitely bizarre era in American history, it's a shame, Tom, that he won't be around to offer commentary on it.
From Washington, D.C., Simon Marks, American Week.